Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Pro-Trump extremists on Wednesday rioted, broke past fences, and breached the U.S. Capitol building just as Congress began the debates over objections to the Electoral College results from the 2020 presidential election. The violence interrupted lawmakers as the intruders laid siege to what President-elect Joe Biden later called the Citadel of Liberty.
The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition, and it must end now.
While his supporters broke through barricades and shattered Capitol windows, Trump was mute. He later released a pre-recorded video falsely reasserting his claims of victory before calling for an end to the violence and praising the rioters.
This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special.
Twitter and YouTube later removed the video. Twitter also suspended Trump's account. Chris Ciliza is a political commentator and hosts The Point on CNN. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And Eugene Daniels is a national political reporter at Politico. Welcome to the show, Eugene.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Eugene, Congress early this morning certified Joe Biden as president. Some lawmakers who planned to challenge the results changed their minds, including newly defeated Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler. How did lawmakers explain their change of heart in a way that made sense?
It was kind of in a roundabout way, honestly. You know, Loeffler, for example, talked about how she couldn't in good conscience do this anymore. But what's surprising is they still talked about the fact that they thought that the argument that President Trump was making that riled up all of these this mob yesterday and has happened since November 3rd, they talked about how that still rings true to them. And so it's hard to make sense of that argument because those two things work in complete conflict of each other by condemning the violence, but talking about the reason that the violence happened still makes sense.
Yeah, and Chris, you wrote that their regrets come too late, whatever they may be.
Yeah, and just to echo Eugene's point, they changed because the violence happened, because we saw the Capitol overtaken. But it seems to me that that reflects the fact that there was never any there to begin with. This was always sort of a political ploy to appease Donald Trump. But when the consequences of their words and actions were sort of made plain to them, well, then suddenly it wasn't something that they thought was a good idea anymore, which honestly, again, I think just sort of exposes the whole thing for what it really was, beginning with Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, who did this not really out of personal conviction necessarily, but far more to sort of distinguish himself among the Trump base as he looks to run for president in 2024.
Yeah, and you could see that in the picture that continued all around social media yesterday, that I'm assuming his staff is probably not very happy that is out there now, because he's throwing a fist up to what started as protesters and turned into a mob kind of soon after that picture was taken. And that's something I think that's going to haunt him as he is looking at 2024. And I think Democrats and some Republicans are going to make sure that it haunts him. The same thing with someone like Ted Cruz, who followed Hawley.
You know, frankly, I have to say I tuned in at 1 o'clock because I did foresee the consequences of their actions. And I wanted to observe. If I thought nothing was going to happen, I had better things to do with my day. And of course, I have a crick in my back from laying on the couch watching it all night. I did not, however, stay up all night to watch it. And I was surprised that they went ahead, concluded the objections, the debate over the objections to the Arizona vote, and then went ahead and went through with the objections to the Pennsylvania vote, electoral vote. these were the last ditch efforts. These were these last six guys and gals, I guess, who had to make this show for Trump. Eugene?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your first point is so important about like seeing this coming. The thing that is, you're looking online, you're seeing a lot of condemnation of the violence, people saying, you know, Republicans and specifically Trump supporters and allies saying they can't believe that this happened, except people told us they were going to do that. They told us that for weeks, right? Reporters went out and talked to Trump supporters during the Georgia Senate runoff rallies that President Trump had, two of those, the Pence rallies that he had there. And all you heard was, we're going to take over. We're going to take up arms. This is our government and they can't have it. And President Trump and Vice President Pence, all of them heard these things. So while yesterday was shocking, it wasn't surprising. And then more importantly, during the rally that happened right before it, Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, talked about trial by combat. That was how this election was going to be solved. Trial by combat. You heard President Trump's sons talking about fighting for Trump, and President Trump echoed all of these sentiments himself. And so the question is, how can you be surprised by something like this when you're riling these people up for years? Since the Iowa caucus, when President Trump lost to Ted Cruz, he's been saying every time he loses an election or any kind of primary, he is the victim of some kind of conspiracy theory that he has cooked up himself.
You know, the shifting sands of politics, you know, I've been covering that for years, Chris Eliza, but what is the deal with the U.S. Capitol Police? I mean, aren't they trained?
Yeah.
Is it? I mean, what, you know, just listening yesterday, you know, so much of what we observed was not conducted with, media insights. And I just wondered what is going on. And later, after they were dispersed, more came out. But what did you make of that, Chris?
I was surprised that they were surprised.
Right.
I guess I'd put it that way. In the same way to Eugene and your point, Ann, about how, you know, a regular person watching all of this, well, if you put a large number of people who have been fed a series of lies about the election and you put the president in front of them saying we need to be tough, not weak, let's go down and march to the Capitol, that things might happen. In the same way, this rally was not impromptu. Donald Trump had been promoting this rally on Twitter for weeks. So the Capitol Police had to know what was coming. I mean, what you saw was them being overrun.
Right.
There weren't enough of them. And they kept pulling back and pulling back and, you know, ultimately protecting, doing sort of their baseline job, which is protect the senators, protect the House members, protect the media who were trapped in that building. But yeah, I mean, I think that among the things that come out of what happened yesterday, and I think the ripples and the impacts were not even 24 hours out.
Right.
I think we'll see more. But among the things that I think has to happen is a reconsidering of what we had assumed was a pretty safe place. I mean, I remember in the late 1990s, a guy sort of stormed the magnetometers and stormed the Capitol and shot two U.S. Capitol Police officers and killed them. And at that time, there was sort of a reckoning of, is this safe enough? It's been a while since then. And now I think it is hard for me to comprehend that the U.S. Capitol Police didn't see the possibility, maybe not that these groups were able to break into the actual U.S. Capitol, sit in the chair, you know, the Senate chair, go into Nancy Pelosi's office and take a letter, put your feet up on her desk, but at least see the possibility that there were lots and lots of people who were very angry and had been misled for months and years, to Eugene's point, by this president, and that something bad might happen in relation to them.
And obviously, the rhetorical question has to be asked, what if this was thousands of Black people? What if this was Black Lives Matter, Eugene Daniels? I mean, it's unfathomable.
It is. And I mean, every Black person that I know and that I've seen online and that I can imagine are watching this happen and just knowing that no Black person could get away with something like this, right? Like a group of Black and brown people could not overtake the Capitol. And the reason we know this is because during the summer in Washington, D.C., when there were largely, very largely peaceful protests in Washington, D.C. against racism, the president had the National Guard protecting the Lincoln Memorial. Like no one, at no point had anyone said they were going to attack that. And that we, the reaction to Black and Brown protesters in this country was completely different than what we saw. And more importantly, the way that the, you know, this, you know, a vastly majority white crowd went up to police, they showed no fear, right? There's no concern. Right. They talked about that this is a party, as the president put it, that backs the blue and is about law and order. But in no way did they have any qualms about running up to police officers, cussing them out, fighting them,
hand-to-hand combat in the Capitol. It was a shocking thing.
And can I just add one point to Eugene's? I think one of the most stunning numbers that came out of yesterday that I've seen differing reports, but somewhere between 15 and 20 people were arrested. Really?
Right.
15, 20 people?
Do they have to return the property they took?
I referenced the guy who, you know, took his picture with his feet up on Pelosi's desk and then sort of proudly displayed a letter he had stolen. He gave his name to journalists. There's no secret here who he is. I mean, the idea that these people, and just to echo Eugene's point, well, let's just say that a group of largely African-American protesters stormed the Capitol, okay? And they walk through the Capitol. The idea that they would be let simply walk out, which is what happened. I mean, most of these
people were— The door held open for them?
Helping them down the steps.
These people were not arrested. These people broke into the U.S. Capitol, breaking windows,
right,
defacing property. I mean, that to me is stunning. I thought I candidly thought I read it wrong.
Yeah.
When I was reading 15 people, there were thousands of people running to the Capitol.
Right.
I mean, that to me, if you need a better example of the ways in which policing and race are not equitable in this country, You got it on your screen yesterday.
Before I let you guys go, I have to know what your thoughts are about triggering the 25th Amendment, removing the president from office. I mean, members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, excluding a few, have roundly blamed the president for inciting this violence. Eugene Daniels, what are your thoughts about the value of doing it with just whatever it is, 12 or 13 days before inauguration? What do you think?
I think the thing that I'm almost certain of is that they don't have enough time, right? Mm-hmm.
Because they take time to do everything.
Something that I even had to Right. I had to even explain to my partner yesterday that it's not like immediate, right? Like Pence doesn't wake up and go to the cabinet and it's over, right? The VP and a majority of the cabinet invoke it. The president can and probably would object, but then it goes to Congress and then 2/3 of each chamber need to approve it, right? And these are things that just don't seem possible, especially yesterday when we still saw half of House Republicans objecting to the certification, mm-hmm, of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's victory. And so I don't think it's going to happen. I think what it really tells us, as we see even Republicans say things like this, is that this is about the mindset and the concern for people in the White House, because we're hearing that even cabinet secretaries are talking about this, and the administration. And that should be concerning to Americans. It's concerning to us as reporters who have followed this for years, because the president, while he doesn't have Twitter, he still has every other tool that he has ever had and you will have as president of the United States. And I think that's something that when you talk to Republicans and Democrats, especially behind the scenes, they're very concerned about.
You know, point taken, Eugene, but Chris, there are others and I've read headlines saying that Trump is planning more in the next 13 days. I just checked the date, you know, the next 13 mm-hmm. days.
I mean, I don't know how you could assume he wouldn't, right? I mean, the pardoning of Michael Flynn or Roger Stone or Paul Manafort or Charles Kushner or Jared Kushner's dad, I mean, those things feel like child's play in the wake of what we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
And so I have learned with Trump, when someone says, do you think X is possible? I don't say no, because I think the last 4 years has taught us that you can't say no. There are, he has no constraints. He very rarely had any constraints, but at this point, he has nothing holding him to either the Republican Party. He's never really cared about sort of the office of the presidency and what that entails. And so, unfortunately for the country, I just don't think you can rule anything out. And as evidence of that, look, Donald Trump saw an insurrection aided and abetted by him and fomented by him and his allies happening in front of him in the U.S. Capitol, in the city he lives in. His response to that was to film a video that said, "I love you. It's time to go home, but they did steal this election." That abdication of leadership and responsibility suggests to me that anything at this point is mm-hmm. possible. And that's a very scary thought, mm-hmm. given what we saw yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, to both of you, thanks so much. Chris Ciliza, political commentator, host of The Point on CNN. Thanks for your time today, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Eugene Daniels, national political reporter at Politico. Thank you so much, Eugene. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me anytime.
You bet. Coming up, a couple of political scientists and a member of the Congress, Representative Tim Ryan, will join us. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Numerous lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have blamed President Trump for the violence that erupted at the U.S. Capitol yesterday as Congress debated the final counts of the 2020 Electoral College results. Senate Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer of Detroit did not mince words.
This president bears a great deal of the blame. This mob was in good part President Trump's doing. Incited by his words, his lies.
The criticism has been leveled part and parcel with growing calls to invoke the 25th Amendment. Maybe an issue of censure is involved to remove Trump from office one way or the other. U.S. Representative Tim Ryan represents the 13th Congressional District in Northeast Ohio. He's chair of the committee that oversees the U.S. Capitol Police budget. Welcome to the show, Representative Ryan.
Great to be on with you. Thanks.
So can you describe what it was like for you when the rioters broke into the Capitol yesterday?
Yeah, I was actually in the last day of a quarantine. I'd come in contact with someone who tested positive. I tested negative three times, but I was by myself in my office and started to get alerts from the Capitol Police. First, there was an external breach. And then, you know, minutes later, there's an internal breach when they started to get into the Capitol. We were told to lock our doors, stay away from the windows, find your gas masks. So, you know, pretty startling, pretty surreal to think that this was happening all while I had it on the TV and watching people, you know, swinging from the Capitol with flags. It was crazy.
As I mentioned, you chair a committee that oversees the U.S. Capitol Police budget. You must have been watching on television like the rest of us. What were your thoughts when you saw how they responded to the violence?
Well, first, let me just say that the rank and file, I think, did the best they possibly could. I mean, they held the line, the breach that eventually happened, they held that for about an hour and 15 minutes. We have 50 or 60 officers who are injured, 15 that went to the hospital, one's in critical condition, getting hit with pipes in the head, a lot of head injuries. The critique I have and that makes me livid is to think how unprepared we were, given everything that the president has done and said over the last 4 years, but more precisely in early December, saying that January 6th is going to be a heck of a day. It's going to be wild. He whips everybody up into a frenzy yesterday morning, saying you got to be strong. You can't take your country back being weak, and basically gave him a pregame pep talk and sent him down to the Capitol and said, "I'll meet you down there." So at the end of the day, he's very, very responsible. But we should have anticipated this. The Capitol Police should have anticipated this. They told us they had it handled, And we're investigating it right now. And I can just promise everybody we are going to get to the bottom of this. This should not have happened.
Both U.S. attorneys for Ohio, David DeVillers of the Southern Ohio District and outgoing Justin Herdman of the Northern Ohio District, said they'll prosecute any Ohioan committing federal crimes at the Capitol yesterday or anytime going forward. What do you know about that process? Because there were so few arrests yesterday, given the number of people that were even on the floor found right in the Capitol.
Yeah, you know, it came down to because of the lack of support that the Capitol Police and others, Sergeant at Arms and others, failed to get with the National Guard and the region and all the rest. There weren't enough people to actually arrest. They were too busy basically getting everybody out or trying to prevent them from getting in. At the same time, there were pipe bombs at the Republican National Committee and at the Democratic National Committee. There was a cooler full of Molotov cocktails. There were 9 or 10 people that they had guns with. So they were dealing with a lot, which gets back to why didn't we have enough people there? Mm-hmm. So there weren't enough officers in place to actually arrest people. But there's a ton of video, as you can imagine, in 2021 that those U.S. attorneys are going to be able to identify people who may be from Ohio or wherever they're from and fully prosecute them. And I think it's very important that everybody gets prosecuted. What they did yesterday was breaking federal law. And, you know, for the law and order party and the law and order president, they had a complete disregard for law enforcement. They sent, you know, hurt 50 or 60 of them and sent 15 to the hospital. That's not respect for law enforcement, and that they should be prosecuted accordingly.
Two questions about going forward. Movements to either invoke the 25th Amendment, remove the president from office, slash censure him. What do you think is a realistic move like this, given his term, or is it just are we just hearing, you know, is it just politics at this point?
Well, I didn't think we should have left Washington, D.C. without impeaching him. I think he needs to be impeached immediately. This is a dangerous human being who holds a lot of power that the American people have given to him. He has shown over the last 4 years he just abuses it, and he's shown in the last few days that he will do, as your previous reporter that you had on said, there is no limit now. There is no line he won't cross. And if he's willing to send a mob down to the Congress to disrupt and try to basically run a coup and prevent, you know, a duly elected person from getting the votes counted or getting the votes certified, what will he do in the next 2 weeks? And I just don't think we should risk that. He's a dangerous person, either 25th Amendment or impeachment immediately, and let Pence administer a peaceful transition of power.
What did you think of Vice President Mike Pence yesterday and how he handled the certification process, you know, in light of everything, even if there had not been violence, in light of what the president was saying about him?
You know, I mean, look, he did a great job. The bar is so low that it's like he administered and the certification without buying into Trump's craziness and nonsense and lies. And so we give him kudos. Yes, he did a nice job. He did a good job. Mitch McConnell gave a very statesmanlike speech. But I will tell you, I'm not impressed with any of these people who are now, after the mob takes over the Congress, all of a sudden they're saying, well, we can't support violence. I'm not impressed with any of these people, Ann, that come late. And a lot of Republicans in Ohio, quite frankly, who were in the witness protection program for the last 4 years, wouldn't say anything. They coddled this president. They looked the other way. They allowed him to slowly but surely continue down this road of abuse of power and inciting violence, going all the way back to Virginia. And now they come in and they want to give statesmanlike speeches. Ben Sasse yesterday, I mean, he was quiet when President Trump wanted to run a primary against him. He kissed Trump's rear end, got through his primary with no, you know, without Trump coming after him. And now he wants to make a statesmanlike speech. I mean, I've had it with these phonies that can't be candid and have no courage to try to take on the biggest threat to our democracy that we've seen. And because they were cowardly, that it led to what happened yesterday. And they're all complicit to this. So I'm not impressed with people doing their job that they're supposed to be doing all of a sudden. when the fact of the matter is they've created this monster, this Frankenstein that we all have to deal with now.
Just one more question. I'll let you go. My previous guest said, yeah, a 25th Amendment, maybe censure, maybe. But the way the Congress operates, there's not enough time to get that done.
Well, we would have had to stay. You know, we would have had to stay here or immediately get called back to get it done. And you would need Mitch McConnell and enough Republicans in the Senate, you know, to find the courage to do it as well. So we're kind of banking on the cabinet having to do it, I think, at this point, because the House leadership, which I think is a big mistake, let us go home without doing anything. We should have acted. This is a treasonous act, and we should have acted. We can't let this happen. And, you know, maybe we have to rely on the cabinet now, but he doesn't have his Twitter account. So when he gets that back, what's he going to start doing again? And we're all going to have to deal with this. Our responsibility is to protect the American people, protect this process, show some competence and commitment to this community that we have in the United States, and protect that's our church. That's the church of democracy that we saw stormed yesterday. And these are our rituals. And we're allowing this man to try to destroy him. And I think we should take a firmer stance on that.
U.S. Representative Tim Ryan represents Ohio's 13th Congressional District. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Joining us now is Wendy Smooth. She's an associate professor of women's gender and sexuality studies and political science at Ohio State. Welcome back, Wendy Smooth.
Thank you for having me, Anne.
And also Paul Beck, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you, Anne. Good to be with you. Good to see Wendy also.
What went through your minds as you witnessed the events yesterday? Wendy Smooth?
You know, Anne, as someone who studies democracy, I was shaken to the core. Everything that I teach my students, everything that I have come to deeply believe about the American democracy was challenged deeply yesterday during the insurrections. It's something I never imagined could happen in the U.S. These are things that we go around the world chastising other countries for these kinds of failures of peaceful demonstration, this mob-like behavior. And the other thing of it is, so much of our American exceptionalism rests not only on the bountifulness of the words of the Constitution, but it also rests on the kinds of norms and operating procedures that were violated on yesterday in the disruption of the processes. And those norms are the pieces that exceed the Constitution. And those are the pieces that make us exceptional, because those are the things that have been so durable. So that was really upsetting yesterday, to see that level a violation.
Yeah, Paul Beck.
Well, I, like Wendy, was appalled by what I saw yesterday, deeply troubled by it, deeply saddened by it. Unfortunately, it is part of America. And the sad thing about yesterday is that these are the Trump shock troops, in a way. But behind them is a president who is egging them on, encouraging them, spreading the falsehood that indeed he was cheated out of winning the election. And millions upon millions of Americans buy this, they accept this. And going forward, that is going to present something that is a real challenge for us to try to deal with.
You know, Van Jones on CNN yesterday said something that really resonated with me. He asked the question, is this the end of something or the beginning of something? And I wanted to get your take on that. Paul, let's start with you. And of course, you guys talk between yourselves. I mean, this isn't over.
Well, my hope is that it's the last gasp of the Trump administration. But still, he has 13 more days, and it's hard to know what he could do in that period of time. And so I think one needs to be really, really wary about this going forward. But at least Trump will be out of the White House in 13 days, and that's got to be an improvement. But we will still be left with a polarization that is so deep that millions upon millions of Americans regard the other side as the enemy, and an enemy that is to be resisted at every turn. And that is something the Biden administration and all Americans really have to deal with going forward.
Now, Wendy Smooth.
Yeah, I agree with Paul, but I'd have to say, I don't think this is the beginning nor the end. I think we're in the middle. What we saw on yesterday has been in the making since 2016. And we have to realize that polarization in the building, this was a crescendo, but not the crescendo. And I think we need to be very guarded of what is to come, not only in the next 13 days, but what is to come beyond into the Biden-Harris administration. We can look forward, I believe, to such challenges. And so, I mean, Paul and I had an opportunity to chat a little bit off air. I mean, one of the things that I'm, you know, most disappointed by are our elected officials who take the oath to protect the Constitution, to serve the Constitution. And we continue to see some of the breakdown of that commitment in the service of political ambition, in the service of a desire to capture the Trump base. Those are the things that I think we will need to directly grapple with. So there's definitely this impetus to punish the president, but I think those punishments and accountabilities go far beyond Donald Trump.
Let me just add to this what Wendy has said, and that is that there are politicians out there who very much want to capture for themselves the Trump base. Would like to serve as president in 2024 and are positioning themselves to be the inheritors in a way of the Trump base. And the problem with that, and I'm talking about in particular Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, the problem is that these are not incompetent people. A lot of the problem that Trump has had and the Trump administration has had is their sheer incompetence. They were not very effective autocrats, maybe is the way to put it. Hawley and Cruz and others like them have the potential to be able to capture that base. We'll have to see whether they can or not, but also to run a campaign in a way that is a competence-based campaign. And that itself is very scary.
Interesting. I'm going to turn to Linda in Salem. Linda, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I really feel, you know, Trump should be treated as anybody else. If somebody else would have incited something like that, what would have been done to them? Because he's president does not give him an excuse to do things like this. You know, it's just showing, you know, his bitterness, his anger, his rage. Mm-hmm. And when he's, I don't feel he needs to finish his term at all.
So, Sorry, Linda, I took you off the air there.
I think he needs to be put behind bars and left there because people are not safe around him.
All right.
Not at all, and he's shown this.
Let me talk to Paul Beck and Wendy Smooth. I mean, we've been talking about earlier in the program, you probably heard about the prospects for, you know, triggering the 25th Amendment, invoking it, I guess is the word, or censure. You know, Wendy, I mean, what are the prospects for that? The journalist I had on earlier said there's really not time, particularly with this Congress. Tim Ryan, U.S. Congressman Tim Ryan, just said, well, we shouldn't have left Washington. You need to get at it right away. So there's a time element, too. But yet there's still 13 days. You know, we've read the headlines to do that. More could be done in 13 days. What's the responsibility here?
Yes. I was very heartened to hear Representative Ryan say that they should not have left. And the work is unfinished, very much so. You know, there's all kinds of questions that come into play with the 25th Amendment in terms of what constitutes the majority of the cabinet when we have also, you know, this situation of acting secretaries. We are in completely uncharted waters here. I have to say, I was pulling out my, you know, American government text 101, and right. We have not written about these things sufficiently. But we're in uncharted waters, and I don't even know if the cabinet can move fast enough. But one of the things that we have to think about the importance of needing to do something in this moment is the fact that without some type of censure, without some type of impeachment call or actually enactment of impeachment, Trump can run again for the presidency.
And you mean in impeachment, he would have to be convicted in the Senate, though, and that's what's not happened. Yeah, he's been impeached, but he's never been convicted. Okay, gotcha.
And we actually, and I think it's an important piece of the puzzle to have members of Congress, again, this goes to my point of accountability, on the record in this moment for their support of the president's actions or their rebuking of the president's actions. The congressional record is an important historical marker for us as a nation. It is a playbook, a map, it sets precedent. And those are all very important pieces beyond the kinds of rhetorical conversations.
We're gonna take a quick break. We'll get back to this. We'll get to some more calls. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the unprecedented in modern times breach of the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump extremists yesterday. Four people died. One woman was shot by Capitol Police. The other three deaths have been explained as medical emergencies at this point. After the breach, lawmakers were evacuated to safe locations, then resumed the 2020 electoral vote certification process through the night. Still with us, Wendy Smooth, an associate professor of women's gender and sexuality studies and political science at Ohio State, and Paul Beck, professor emeritus of political science at OSU. Thanks again to both of you for joining us. I want to turn to a caller real quick. Right now, Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, I agree with Professor Beck. We got to focus on the systemic source and not just the symptoms of this social sickness. The conservative indoctrination machine fostered by Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch, and I decry them not because they have an agenda, but because they pursue it through disingenuity and a vitriolic demonization. And any demagogue can then come in and co-opt this thing. The Trump base existed before he came around. He just co-opted the base that was fostered and indoctrinated. They don't even hear the truth. And that's what we have to break up. And thanks for taking my call. Have a great day.
You bet, Charles. Thanks for calling. Okay. So when Donald Trump goes away, such as he might, or whether or not he does, the base will still be there. It's not that will go forward. Paul Beck?
Well, the question is, how large is the base? And I don't know the answer to that. We may find out over time. There are a lot of people who are supportive of Trump because he's a Republican, and they are Republicans. There are a lot of them who are supportive of him because he is not a Democrat with a capital D. And they would vote for any or support any Republican over a Democrat. And then there are the people who are very loyal to Trump himself. And they are large in number. We're talking about, I think, millions of people. And that's the prize, I think, that some Republican politicians are questing after. They want to be the candidates in 2024. And they want that base as a part of their constituency in 2024. Now, I should add that Trump's presence on the scene, the continuing presence, will be very problematic for them because they aren't going to be able to get the Trump base if Trump is still around and a possibility as a candidate in 2024. And so in a way, he is damaging their prospects. And they, of course, need to worry about that. Not that I have a great deal of sympathy for them, but they do need to worry about that. I wanted to respond to one other thing, and that is that I think there is a powerful urge on the part of many people to want to punish Trump for the gross misbehavior that he's engaged in. And that may happen going forward. Unfortunately, I think we don't have in the next 13 days any real possibility of stripping him of his presidential powers. The cabinet approach requires, of course, the votes of cabinet members, many of whom are his acolytes. And even if they are appalled by what he's done, they are not going to vote against him and incur the wrath of the Trump base. And Congress just takes too much time.
Right, that's what I think.
Impeachment would be, there's a process there. And of course, it has to start in the House, be finished in the House, and then goes over to the Senate. We've got 13 days. I think it's just not going to happen. And we have to hope that Trump is not going to do even more to try to carry the country down with him as he is kicked out of the White House. And there is a possibility that he will. But we have to hope that that's not going to happen.
You know, and I want to say as well, you know, Paul, to your point about understanding the base, there is a segment of the base. Yes, they are loyal to Trump, but they also are loyal to the values that Trump represents. And a kind of critical clinging to a version of, frankly, white supremacy in the nation. Those are also a part, as much as it disheartens me to say it, that is a part of America. It's not our pretty part. It's not the part we like to dress up and take around the world, but it is a grounding feature of who we are as a nation.
It's,
and something we're continuing to grapple with.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt you, Wendy, but I want to ask you, so when Joe Biden, President-elect Joe Biden, says, this is not who we are, you're saying, well, yeah, it is. And until we confront that fact and deal with it, this isn't going to go away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was, struck by how many of the commentators could actually quickly make the connections between the ways in which the state responded to peaceful protesters with Black Lives Matter and the ways in which police and the state responded to mob insurrection, violent rioters, and the Capitol Police became ushers to let them into the building and step aside, as opposed to the kinds of doubling down of the state apparatus of armed rejection of Black protesters. I think we've come a long way, because yesterday, the press saw it immediately and spoke and called it out. Yesterday was progress for us, but we have a long way to go to experience the racial reckoning that is a part of who we are.
There will be hearings. There will be hearings. And I am going to be fascinated about what the U.S. Capitol Police have to say about their preparedness or lack thereof. And when they were confronted face-to-face in hand-to-hand combat with the intruders, the rioters, how they explain their response.
Right. And the absence of the National Guard, right? We have to also invoke that, which early stories began to talk about Mayor Bowser's role or lack of role, but we have to understand also the role of DC government in relationship to the federal government, in relationship to the Capitol. So there are all of these carved spaces of power that exist differently. The president can call the National Guard, as he did on Black Lives Matter protesters on what is now known as Black Lives Matter Way in Washington, D.C.
The famous Holding Up the Bible Day?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joe.
Oh, excuse me. Hi.
That's okay.
Hi, Ann. You know, I've listened to you on and off over the years, ever since you kind of came to Columbus. I would thank you for having me on, by the way.
Sure.
I would consider myself more of an ex-liberal, and I start to lean more conservative now.
Uh-huh.
I did vote for the president. And, you know, I have to wonder whether conservatives feel like there is a space for them, whether there's a space where they can be heard anywhere at all. And, you know, I've been listening to the show, and I hear a lot of negative stuff about the president and people who voted for him. And it's usually the same stuff we've been hearing the past 4 years. They're all evil. The president's racist.
Well, I don't think
that's
okay.
That,
and
seems
and
really extreme.
Well, I don't want to not listen to you. I want to listen to you, but I also want to clarify. We're talking about what happened yesterday. Number one, Paul Beck iterated or enumerated the different stripes within the pro-Trump movement. There's lots of different kinds of people who support President Trump. The rioters yesterday were one part of that, you know, were one stripe of that. And that's kind of what we're talking about now. They breached the U.S. Capitol.
I mean, I from my perspective, I don't know what else you would expect.
And, like, and the part about not being
to bring people to a table and hear their concerns.
They got to. They have.
If you're not going to foster talking with one, if we're not going to talk with one another about our differences, then we're going to end up having defaults to the worst sides of our nature.
And
I'm not sure that the media, especially NPR, which I have, you know, I grew up and loved or used to love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that they reflect anything that has to do with my values at all.
Okay. Wendy Smooth.
You know, the callers, I'm sorry to catch the name, but, you know,
Joe,
that sentiment is a really strong sentiment across the country. And I do think we have to deal with and address two points. One, we are viewing, we're seeing the events, but we're processing them very differently across the country with very different perspectives. We are, in order to move forward, we are going to have to find spaces of deliberation. But deliberation is not getting
your way.
But the
media used to be that
conversation.
Why do you, what do you think changed about the media, Joe? We're running out of time, so I want to hurry you up, but I do want to know, what do you think changed and when?
You know, I feel like it's hard to pinpoint that. I know that liberals have not been happy since Trump got elected. I don't hear any sorts of media even reflecting a different point of view. It all seems to be very one-sided.
Wait, what did you? Okay, I guess I would have to. Paul Beck, we're running out of time.
Let me cut in here. I want to come back to the point the caller made early on, and that is that I think there is less room for true philosophical conservatives these days, because Trump has basically undertaken a hostile capture of the Republican Party. The Democrats, of course, are going to be more liberal and more progressive, so there's not a home there for somebody like the caller. The real question, I think, going forward is whether the Republican Party is going to go back to its roots, in a sense, and be the articulate spokesperson for philosophical conservatism. And I think that is very much in play going forward.
Joe, thanks for that call. Thanks for listening. As I sent in a message to both of you, never enough time. We will continue our conversation at a future date. If for the time being, thank you so much for your time today. Wendy Smooth is a political scientist, teaches at Ohio State University. Paul Beck is a professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State. Thanks to both of you for your time today.
Thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
Thanks for everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.